global agency in a fast-changing business and creative industry comes with its own set of challenges. As a part of our CEO series, I asked Margaret Johnson OBE, the group CEO of Legas Delaney, about leading a global creative team.
You can't fake an interest in your client. It's easy to be superficial, and it's easy to pretend that you're a partner to your client. The word partnership is one of the most abused words in across all industries, professional services. I think you can only become a true partner if you're interested in the human side of your clients.
We discuss how she builds client relationships, cultivates empathy in teams, and how they maintain local relevance for clients in various regions.
Fundamentally, creativity solves human problems and business problems and marketing problems. So what keeps me awake at night is a number of things. One, clients, and making sure that we, as I said at the beginning, we are never ever consciously letting our clients down.
This is The Lead Creative. Please subscribe and share this episode. It helps us grow, which means we keep bringing great guests. Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Monge Zimtati. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe. Margaret, thank you so much for making time to talk to us on The Lead Creative as part of your tour of and launch of Legas Delaney South Africa. How has it been?
It's been one of the highlights of, you know, certainly my career. I feel so excited to be here at a time when the agency is really just about to sort of open its doors to all the clients and new opportunities. So it's been fantastic. I've been hugely inspired being here, meeting Investec, who are our existing client, but very importantly, spending time with the team here who are going to be building the agency in the future.
One of the things that I find fascinating around sort of marketing and creativity is how people end up in this industry. What was your journey to ending up in the creative and marketing industry?
That's a great question. I started my career with Unilever, and I was given the opportunity then to work with a company that really believed in the power of communications and advertising. And quite early on in my career, I started in consumer insight. I realized that the most fun part of the job was actually spending time with a creative agency and seeing how, from a brief, which is quite logical, it's got a lot of information, they would then turn up and bring some amazing ideas. And I was lucky enough to see it from the beginning, inputting into the brief, right the way through to seeing the impact that ideas had on consumers and their power to build brands. So quite early on, after about 2 years, I decided that really my heart belonged to the creative industry, and I was able to move quite, you know, relatively early in my career to work in advertising.
Yeah, and you've since made a huge impact in this space. In your view, what idea or trend is shaping the creative industry and will continue to?
I think the creative industry, at the heart of the creative industry, is having ideas. Because ideas, everyone can have ideas, but really the reason clients and brands value our ideas is because we need to give them something beyond, you know, things they can imagine themselves, and to be able to deliver those ideas on strategy. Because we're all creative. I'm sure you have great ideas every morning. I'm sure everybody does. But they're really, the reason clients value our work and will continue hopefully to value it is because we can deliver that creativity against very clear briefs. That, and those briefs are designed to solve a business problem. So it's not just about having an idea, it's whether that idea can have the outcome that collectively both the client and the agency need to be able to solve either a business problem or a marketing problem.
Interesting. And I think, I mean, ideas have come up, I think, twice since we started talking, right? I think it's the one thing that kind of moves the needle for business, but also shaping the creative industry itself. Something that I've noticed, and I also read this on the Legacy Delaney side as well as a blog, which is this idea of in-housing or insourcing creativity by a lot of brands, which is happening quite a lot. And there's this cycle, right, of sometimes they insource, sometimes they outsource creative work to agencies. What is the impact of that on brands? Just sticking with this idea of ideas, what's the impact of that on brands? Because one of the things that brands value, as I talk to them sometimes when they work with an agency, is that an agency, someone who works in an agency, apart from them being an outsider with a different perspective from the brand itself, they also, part of the value they bring is the fact that they, today they work on a car brand, tomorrow they work on a banking brand, the following day they work on a fashion brand. So when you come in as a pharmaceutical company, for example, it's because of all of these ideas that this person kind of brings. So what is the value of insourcing for a brand?
Insourcing is a trend that's been happening for years and years. And if you look at the numbers, I think about 80% of brand owners will now have some kind of in-house creative facility, whether it's designers or, you know, some brands have, you know, fully fledged creative teams and performance teams. And the reason many brand owners decided to in-house is to do with the amount of volume of work they have to produce. So if you look at just the last few years with the impact and growth of not only social media, but e-commerce, events, you know, it's huge, the amount of content. So many brand owners have decided to split the work they will do with outside agencies is there, as you say, to bring the big idea, the idea that's going to hopefully drive awareness, that's going to drive perceptions of the brand, and then working with that idea, often the in-house teams will then execute it in lots and lots of places. So what brand owners are trying to do effectively is to balance their tight budgets between getting some outside inspiration and consultancy from creative agencies, but also delivering it in the most cost-effective way through their in-house teams.
How does this affect the agency, though, this in-house?
Yeah, no, it's a great question, because I think our industry has dramatically changed in the last few years. So for a lot of agencies, they've moved from being retained agencies who produced all the work for a client to only doing part of their work, and often only working on a project basis. So that has its upsides and downsides. The upsides are it keeps people very competitive and very alert to the fact that they don't have agency relationships which happen month in and month out. The downside is that often you lose that sort of deep brand knowledge that agencies used to have. Because constantly clients are only retaining agencies on a project basis, and it makes it more difficult for agencies often to deliver the quality that they want to do. But life has changed and we just have to adapt to it and recognise that clients need to actually do the best against their budgets and they need different solutions.
Yeah. Another thing that both clients and agencies themselves have been talking about quite a lot is creative effectiveness. This has become a key topic. Again, it comes up in different ways. Creative effectiveness, it used to be ROI at some point, but now you're seeing it appear even in award shows quite a lot, where agencies are being awarded on creative effectiveness. Why do you think this has gained so much importance lately, and how can the creative industry continue to prove its value to business in this fast-changing landscape, as you've just put it?
I think creative effectiveness has always been at the heart of what agencies, professional agencies, needed to deliver for their clients. I think it's been difficult to measure, and it's been difficult to have often clear goals that are measurable. But I think that agencies that don't put creative effectiveness at the heart of what they do are agencies that are not really going to survive into the future. I think it's always been at the heart of Lee Ghislaini that we are 100% focused on understanding right at the beginning of any kind of campaign development, what is the outcome we are trying to achieve? Not just, are we going to have great craft skill and a great idea and, you know, it's going to win awards. That's always been secondary to having deep strategic understanding to the impact that communications has to deliver. And often that is not only, you know, quantitative metrics like awareness or, you know, and they are very, very important, but often also you have to think about the people that work in the company and making sure that they feel really proud of the work that they're seeing on their televisions or in the various social media. So we've got to always think not just of the hard metrics and the metrics you're trying to move with consumers or your target market, but also think about all the other soft metrics, about the importance of people internally being hugely inspired by communications. So it's a complex job, but always keep the outcome that you're trying to do at the heart of everything you do and the effectiveness of that.
As the CEO of one of the leading global independent agencies out there, how do you personally measure the agency's creative success? Is it about how you show up in the market, or is it about the long-term impact of your client work?
Oh, that's a great question. I think really the greatest test of any kind of effectiveness as an agency is whether or not you build deep client relationships. Because clients have got so much choice, they can take their business to any other agencies. So a great example of that is our relationship with Patek Philippe, those very, very premium luxury watches that you never actually own, that you look after only for the next generation. Yeah. We've worked with, as you've seen the campaign, have you? The father and sons, that they are... we have worked with Patek Philippe for 30 years now. And right at the beginning, the owner of Patek Philippe said, I want this to be a minimum of 10-year relationship. And from the outset, you have to have the ambition to do such great, effective work for your client that they will want to build a deep, long-standing relationship with us. And that is really one of the key measures of success of Lee Ghislaini in the market, that we have many, many, many long-standing relationships. So Investec, for example, we were first appointed to work with them in the UK in 2017. And through that, we were invited to open an office in South Africa for them. And now, you know, we have worked with them since 2020 in the South Africa too. And we're deeply proud of that. We're always deeply humbled and proud when a client asks us to extend our relationship and to make sure that we give them the teams and the talent that they need in different markets.
And I love that you have these long-standing relationships, because one of the things that has been that is being debated quite a bit in South Africa, or was debated in some corners of the industry, is the long-standing relationships that clients have with their agencies. And in my mind, what I wonder is, how do you keep the thinking, the strategy, the idea fresh when you've worked with a client for a long time, on the one hand, and on the other, because you've worked with this client for so long, you are able to really build a solid strategic foundation. How do you get to that point? And how do you enter into a relationship where you don't know that it's going to be a 10, 20, 30-year long relationship and still build that strong strategic foundation?
That is such a great question. I think the number one thing is never, ever to take that relationship for granted. Every day you have to know that clients are under pressure and clients are looking to advance the work that you give them. That I've never met a client who values a complacent relationship. So what you have to do is constantly not just be curious, but recognise that you're in a very privileged position to have a relationship with a client. And your job as an agency is to constantly be doing the extra thinking that clients in their busy lives often don't have the time to constantly be looking at those strategic foundations and constantly be saying, are they relevant to today? Are they relevant to my consumer in a market where suddenly influencers, social media, new competition, different difficult economic climates. So the job of an agency is to constantly be anticipating that and constantly be adjusting and tweaking and enhancing and proactively going to your clients with new ideas, new thinking that are relevant. You know, clients love ideas, but they want relevant ideas based against a strategy. So my top tip is never take that for granted. It's like any human relationship. If you become complacent, you don't deserve that relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the moment you become complacent is this time when you start losing that relationship.
Absolutely. And this time that you stop not being competitive and the time that you stop doing ordinary things. And clients want extraordinary things that they can't do for themselves, from their agencies. And they'd rightly expect agencies to constantly be ahead of where they can be themselves.
So there's a question that I ask our guests. And one of the person I ask this question is your team member, Dumi Rabanye. And the question really to her was, if she could ask anybody in the industry or outside the industry their thoughts on creativity, marketing, or life, who would she choose? And she chose you.
Oh, my goodness. I am hugely flattered.
And in a nutshell, her question to you links back to what you've just been talking about cultivating client relationships. So in short, the question was, how do you cultivate the ability to see your clients beyond just as business partners to them being people? Because in her view, you have the kind of empathy that helps to build solid client relationships. How do you cultivate that?
Oh, gosh. I think you can't fake an interest in your client. It's easy to be superficial and it's easy to pretend that you're a partner to your client. The word partnership is one of the most abused words across all industries, professional services. I think you can only become a true partner if you're interested in the human side of your clients, because clients turn up every day as human beings to their role, whether they're a CMO or a junior exec or the CEO of that company. So you have to inherently want to understand their stories and understand what matters to them emotionally and matters to them, not just about work, but matters to them as human beings. So the moment you realise you're dealing, you know, from one human being to another, and you genuinely have a desire to be curious and to want to connect with it, that to me is something that hopefully I do because, instinctively, intuitively, and that is really what the glue of the relationship. So of course I know their KPIs, of course I know their business objectives, but more importantly, I know them as human beings, what makes them smile, what makes them worried, what makes them the people they are today. And that is one of the things that gives me most joy in actually working in the industry I do, that I get to meet so many people with so many stories who bring those stories to get the best out of our agency day in and day out. And that is one of the key reasons I love the work I do.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
Is that something you went out to deliberately develop in yourself, or is it, as you put it, just something that you developed instinctively over time?
I think it's something that was probably in me. I mean, some of it is, I would say, is being a female. I think we are better at sometimes that empathy and emotion, not emotional connection. It's not just because you're a woman, you have to, but I think female leaders do tend to have an extra level often of emotional vulnerability and sensitivity that helps make those connections a little bit more easily. Having said that, I also think it comes from what makes me, motivates me. I do want to know people's stories. I do want to know where their thinking, their emotions, their worries come from, because then that helps me deliver better leadership for my teams as they deliver for our clients' day-to-day needs.
So I do get the sense of, you know, empathy being a big part of your leadership style and how you lead and how you engage and interact with both clients and your team. How do you nurture that within your team so that it becomes part of agency culture? Because it's not something that we spoke about creative effectiveness, for example. It's not something that, like creative effectiveness, you can measure and say, we've won X number of awards, we are reaching X number of people. Empathy is something else. It's something innate. It's something instinctive. How do you nurture it as a leader in your team?
I think it's a huge challenge, particularly with younger generations who are digital natives, who would much rather communicate via email, WhatsApp, text, who have grown up at that as being their primary way of communication. So it's difficult, I would say, to create that deep empathy if you don't spend time in real life with your clients. And that is increasingly difficult, not just because of the generational shift of communicating digitally with each other, but also because of the pressures day to day that people are under, both on the client side and on the agency side. So it's much easier to send an email, send the creative work via email, than it is to actually spend time with a client and understanding the context by which they're making some of the decisions at work. So how I try to nurture it is constantly trying to make the client present in the agency. So even when we're not able to spend time with them, I always talk to teams and say, imagine how they're feeling. How do you think they're feeling receiving this information? And if you've had sometimes a grumpy email from your client, I often will say, well, maybe they're having a very difficult day. So I try and bring the clients into the room, even when they're not here, to remind everyone that clients are human beings with their own pressures, and to make sure that when they can, we actually spend face time with clients, because that is how really you build empathy. Difficult to build empathy over WhatsApp if you don't have that deep foundation with clients to start with.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And it's something that's, I think, post-COVID, we've been doing a lot less of, like this FaceTime, because COVID accelerated how much we connect virtually without really connecting in person.
Exactly. And I think you've captured it so well. I think the good thing about technology is that we can connect and we can actually see each other. So before COVID, the idea that we could see each other easily and have conversations really wasn't there. So we had Skype, but we didn't really have the sort of adoption from everybody that you could jump on a Zoom call or any kind of call. I don't think that's enough. I think that goes a little way towards solving that human connection, but you cannot replace making the effort to go and see somebody, to spend time with them, to have a cup of coffee with them, to actually talk to them about other things than the work that's there. And I think that particularly for agencies who are not selling, creative ideas are not rational objects. They're things that need to be nurtured, they need to be lived with, they need to be discussed. So you're always best, if you can, to do that, to try and spend time, give that the room to breathe, give that the room to come to life emotionally. And I said, you can't do that over an email.
We touched on strategy a bit earlier. I want to just go back to that with a bit of a change. There's this tension that tends to exist sometimes between data-driven insights and creativity, where in some instances, the numbers and the insights don't align with a big creative vision that you want to deliver for a client. In some cases, in some conversations that we've had, sometimes the best work defies data completely and goes in a completely different direction, right? How do you manage that friction? And when do you know when to trust that, you know, when to trust data or and when to trust creativity over the data?
So I think data can only take you so far. I think I completely celebrate strategies that have data in them, because often the data is skipped. I actually find the opposite problem, that people often want to run to do something without having the real foundations of the data. So data is there, and if you use it well, it can be a real ally. So not all data is equally, but the right data that informs a strategy can be super powerful. But as I said it earlier on, ultimately, we are talking about creating work that touches human beings. And therefore, you have to equally understand what are the human insights, behaviours, attitudes, things that you're trying to unlock. And that doesn't only come from data. It comes from really understanding and unearthing some of the emotions and unexpected things, because this is big news. Human beings are irrational. They tell you one thing and then they do something completely different. So it's super important that we blend both rational information with emotional information, and to actually make sure that we navigate that path that helps us decide whether an idea is the right idea for a client.
No, absolutely. And I think that's a great way of, I think over time also learning how to do that and giving both the space for them to really almost be experienced from a brand and clients, and also the perspective of the work as well. We are seeing shifts globally where businesses are expected to be more conscious of human challenges. Like, humanity is expecting business to be more conscious. Why do you think this is becoming such a pressing issue? And how do you believe that brands and business in general should respond to this social sort of responsibility that is being expected while still growing their business?
I think it's upon all of us to have that social responsibility. I think that social responsibility can be in big things and small things. I think particularly in South Africa, giving back to the community through our teams, you know, making sure that we're helping to train the next generation, making sure that we are conscious of the community that we operate in, is super important. So I don't feel it's a luxury anymore to be conscious of the community. If you look back, the number of industries that destroyed their local communities in the name of growth, and destroyed them through both ignorance and through both not wanting to actually put some of the community interests at heart. You look back on it, and the destruction and devastation that caused is something that is no longer acceptable. I think with the ability to educate ourselves across all things, not just social responsibility, but environmental responsibility. There is no excuse. There is no excuse, and there's no reason why responsible businesses can't grow. I think that some of the best stories are of companies that have embraced that in a way that's authentic to them, that is not just greenwashing or, a ticking exercise, and then they're able to grow with having the social responsibility at the heart of what they do.
There's this cyclical pattern where brands sometimes go with the independent agency and other times they go with the larger networked agency. What do you think drives these trends from a brand perspective, and how do you, as a leader of an independent agency, ensure that you compete effectively with the networked players?
Yeah, and I think there are many, many clients that needed a global footprint. So clients, large-scale clients, depending on their business model, often needed the big agencies with offices in every single country they operated in, and making sure that their local teams had local people who looked after them. I think in the last few years with technology, with the advance of the fact that you can actually really deliver amazing global campaigns from without having a global footprint is changing everything. I think one of the reasons that clients, we have many global clients within Legal Slaney, and the reason they choose us compared to some of the bigger network agencies is that when you're independent, everyone is personally accountable to the clients. You cannot hide behind a leadership team and a headquarters that is somewhere else. So one of the things that, I think the key benefit to a client of working with the right independent agency is that personal commitment, that personal accountability that you put at the heart of everything you do. And the fact that you do make different decisions. So often, and I'm not trying to criticise the networks, that's not, but we don't put that rigorous, well, we can't give you this because you haven't paid for this. We sometimes make also rational decisions to actually over-deliver for a client because we believe that's the right thing for the relationship. And we're able to make those decisions ourselves. We're able to prioritise different objectives for clients because we are independent. And because I trust, for example, in South Africa, that the team don't need any of my leadership day-to-day. We have a great team and they will know what's right for their clients. And being independent, it means that Ray and Toomey and Gavin, who are our leadership team, will make the right decisions for their clients and they will be personally accountable for them. And that is the joy of running an independent agency.
When working with clients that have a presence in both South Africa and the UK, you mentioned Investec as one of your clients, and I've had AB on the podcast as well. How do you approach their strategy to position them authentically in each of these different markets?
Yeah, because that is...
Yeah.
That is a very good question because the business is very different levels of maturity. So the UK is a much less mature business than it is in South Africa. Investec in South Africa has got deep, deep roots and is one of those iconic brands that people talk about, beyond the scale of the brand. It's something that we had heard about in the UK before we'd even started working with Investec. So the key thing about making sure that you do a positioning that is relevant to two very different markets and two different levels of maturity is to start with understanding the culture that is the glue in the two markets. So the people in Investec who I've got in South Africa are as wonderful and ambitious and committed to the brand as they are in the UK. They simply, in the UK, They've got different business challenges. But the one thing, apart from the zebra that lives both in the UK and in other markets and in SA, what we try to do is respond to the local business challenge, but bring the glue of the culture to both markets.
That's very interesting because AB mentioned exactly what you've just mentioned, that the majority of the business and how the business is received in both markets is different, and as a result, it has to almost understand local nuances or be locally relevant in both markets. And it's interesting to hear you say how you achieve that. How though do you balance this global outlook while remaining locally relevant in your creative work across your markets? Because I know that, you know, Lagos Delaney operates in other markets beyond South Africa and the UK, and where you operate, you come up with your own sort of locally relevant insights in those spaces while having this sort of global outlook. How do you balance the two?
I think we do it because we live in global economies. We live in global markets. And whether or not it is a teenage boy sitting in South Africa or a teenage boy sitting in the UK, they're all looking at TikTok. They're all looking at all the latest media. They know more about the world than we will do. So you have to start with answering the, if it's a local brief, with understanding the local insights, but recognize that those local insights now live in a global economy and a global world. So you cannot separate and say this is simply a UK perspective or is simply a South African perspective without recognizing that you can do a very locally relevant piece of work and it's on YouTube next day and people are looking at it. So it is having to balance that and recognize the exciting global nature of the world we live in.
There's this topic that's spoken about quite a lot, this idea of leadership generally. I mean, we've spoken about leadership quite a lot in this conversation. I don't see it though being spoken about within the creative industry quite a lot, like the idea of being, you know, a leader in the creative industry and how that translates or shows up differently to somebody who works in banking or the automotive sector or whatever the case is. What keeps a creative leader or a leader in the creative industry awake at night?
Lots of things. lots of things. I think that going back to a recurring theme in this conversation, we are in the business of people and in the business. And we have, you know, a lot of technology. Technology is changing. And I can certainly at another time talk to you about how AI and how technology is going to impact our business. But fundamentally, creativity solves human problems and business problems and marketing problems. So what keeps me awake at night is a number of things. One, clients and making sure that we, as I said at the beginning, we are never, ever consciously letting our clients down. Because if you do that, you do it once, and then after that, trust is broken. The second big challenge of leadership is having the right talent and making sure that you're always trying to find talent that not only is talented in their craft skill, but talent that shares your values and talent you can trust, because talent represents every day the leaders in the business. And you have to have talent that completely is synonymous with the kind of values that you live by. And that they're really nice people that clients want to hang out with. So those are, and then of course you're going to be worried about numbers and things, but that's any business. But we are people. At the heart of what we do is a people business.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
There's a very interesting thing that comes up for me when I think about talent from, I suppose, a leader's perspective, who's building a big team or who cultivates a big team, right? Is that sometimes talent is like, I feel like talent is almost like, right, opening up a toolkit and knowing what tools to put in there to deliver the right kind of work that you want to deliver. How do you know when you interview someone, when you see them contributing in the industry, that this person is going to be the best person to put in this toolkit within this team to deliver what we kind of want to deliver?
Wow, you've asked me the most difficult question of all. The thing that I find most difficult is making sure that we find, as you said, the right talent with the right toolkit to deliver. And that, I would say, is the thing that I find most difficult, because interviewing somebody is very easy, and it's very easy to say they're not right, but it's very difficult to say they may not have those tools at the moment, but I know in 6 months' time, with the right mentoring and with the right guidance, they are going to be phenomenal. So very difficult. In my career, I have made some terrible mistakes and brought people in who have not been right. And I always feel totally responsible, because if I've brought somebody on board and we've not been able to either develop those skills or being able to actually get the best out of them, I think, number one, it's our responsibility to have done that. So that has been the biggest regret in my career, that I haven't brought some talent on who I thought were going to be right, and for some reason it hasn't worked. But equally, the most rewarding thing is bringing talent in and discovering that you thought they were 20% excellent at this, and then they are much better than you are, and you're like, wow. So that's and that is, for example, with Tumi, who is a leader on strategy, which is my background in SA, is I met her during COVID. I met her remotely. So, you know, we had many, many conversations. And now every conversation I have, I think, oh my goodness, she is even more of a rock star than I thought she was going to be. So that is the delight when you get it right, and the pain when you get it wrong.
Interesting. We usually have a question that we ask our guests to leave for our next guest. And our previous guest was Charles Basil, the Chief Brand Officer of the BBC. And as the question he left for you was, when you're faced with headwinds, when you're faced with challenges that will present themselves, definitely, what do you do personally to keep yourself motivated, to keep yourself positive, and to pick yourself up when you get knocked down?
Gosh, she's left a very, very good question. I think it's inevitable you are going to actually meet terrible headwinds and terrible, some of your own doing, some of the economy, some of bad luck. I think you have to believe that what you can do can make a difference. If you lose confidence in yourself, if you lose your sense of optimism, if you lose the ability to think as a team we can be resilient and we can work this through, then no amount of smart clevers are actually going to get you there. I think the one thing that I've learned in my career is to make sure you draw on all those strengths, your optimism, your resilience, your team, everything, but also try and make decisions fast, because decisions don't make themselves. And when you have those difficult times, you often also have to make difficult decisions. So is to lean into those difficult decisions and to make them, obviously thinking about the consequences, but not to be paralyzed. The worst thing you can do is paralysis, is actually not leaning into those headwinds and thinking about how, you know, you can respond to it in a way that's resilient and that you come out the other end a stronger team.
Sure. So lean into confidence, optimism, and make those tough decisions that have to be made at the time. And lastly, what is the one question that you'd like to leave for our next guest on their thoughts on creativity, marketing, or life?
Gosh, there's a great program, I don't know if you listen to it, on a Saturday in the UK, where they talk about what is the legacy music track that inspired you, and which one would you leave to the next generation? And whilst it's not a very businessy question, I would love to know that. I would love, you know, what is the person or piece of music or something that really inspired you? And what would you leave for the next generation, whether it's your colleagues or your, as you say, in your life? Because I find that storytelling that people have around why they chose a piece of music has been central to their lives, and why they would choose a piece of music to pass on is such a powerful storytelling tool, because it reveals layers upon layers of what makes us human. And it really, it also, they tend to be very optimistic, those legacy points, about the music they would choose. So very random, very different probably to the questions that you get asked, but I would love to know that.
What track would you leave for the next generation?
What track? There is a song, I don't know if you know it, I think it's Dionne Warwick, What a Difference a Day Makes, 24 Little Hours, when they used to be. So that song, when things are going really bad, I say, what a difference a day makes, 24 little hours. I'm an eternal optimist, and I believe that even in the darkest of times, 24 hours will make a big difference. And if you listen to the lyrics, it's a song about optimism into the future.
Awesome. Margaret, thank you so much for making the time. This was an amazing conversation. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thank you. And thank you for giving me the real privilege of being in this conversation with you. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.